have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today, this is our talkback program. Once a week, no guest, no in-depth investigative reporting, no original commentaries that I've been doing almost on a daily basis. Instead, this is your opportunity to call in and share your thoughts, points of view, and comments. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And you can listen over the telephone if you ever have a problem getting online to listen, or your land base station, by calling 619-550-0869, 619-550-0869. I always start with the latest on health and healing. Then I'm going to hit an issue, and the issue today is the lost generation and the failure of capitalism. Also today, one of our listeners wrote the representative from New York, Kristen Gillibrand, a letter about her form letter supporting GMOs and that there's not enough research to determine whether GMOs are safe or not. Really? Well, listen to the letter and the response. Let's begin. Nearly one half of all Americans experience pain in a given year. And of course we know what they do. They'll reach for something to take away the pain. Generally this is something over the counter. Aspirin, ibuprofen, but also then there are heavier prescription drugs, and one of the most popular in America, in fact it was the most popular for about 4 years, was Vioxx. Well, the bad news was that Vioxx caused the death from a heart attack or stroke of over 60,000 Americans, but some people now say that number is grossly underestimated, the actual deaths. They're putting it at 500,000 deaths. The company did not plead guilty. The company was not forced to take a bad, deadly product off the market. The company paid $5.85 billion, and everything went away. Their reputation was not tainted. There's something wrong with that, but that's the way it works. So what do we do when we have pain? Now, pain tells us there's inflammation somewhere in the body. That's a good thing. So we don't want to turn off all inflammatory markers, because then we would not know when we have pain. For example, a lot of diabetics have neuropathy. And when you have neuropathy, you can't always feel when you have a cut, an abrasion, some form of lancing of the skin. You step on a tack. Now, for most people, that's not a problem. The body clots the little puncture, and your body goes in there and immediately starts re-sewing together cells, fibroblastic cells. And you create a scab, and you're healthy. Not so with the diabetic. Diabetic may not even know they have that puncture. It gets infected. Their immune system is down. When your blood sugar is up, you're far more susceptible to infections, and they end up getting gangrene. It's into the thousands of people each year in the United States have toes, legs amputated because of this. So pain is important as long as it tells us something's wrong. And if we learn that, then we end up what we can do about it. Well, right now, we're going to look at just one drug, ibuprofen. This drug is made from petrochemical derivatives. And here's the downside. It's linked to the risk of heart attack and increased cardiac and all-around death, especially when combined with aspirin. It also causes anemia, DNA damage, hearing loss, hypertension, influenza death, and miscarriage. In fact, it is so good at elevating your risk of cardiovascular disease and death that it has a category. So the category of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs appears to have this unrecognized dark side. There's almost 100 unintended adverse health effects associated with their risk, and cardiovascular disease and cardiac death are highest on the list. So, okay, now we got a wake-up call not to use that. And you could verify all this for yourself by looking at the National Library of Medicine, which is the government's official medical repository. That's where they go when they want to see if something accurate or not. What do we do? Well, it's simple. For those of us who are in the field of health, we know that right at the top of the list, we're going to use cat's claw and also St. John's wort. And we're going to use basil. We can use ginkgo, vitamin C, Chinese skullcap, and ginger. And let's say that you have something that's topical, a bruise. Let's say you have tennis elbow, or you have knees from running that are aching. Topical arnica cream. It's terrific for helping to alleviate pain. Now, all these have something in common. None of them have adverse side effects. And especially the omega-3 fatty acids. When you take the omega-3 fatty acids and you take it with black cumin seed oil, the combination of the two does more to turn off inflammation in the body than anything else known. That's why for people with Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, macular degeneration, cataracts, cancer, arthritis, fibromyalgia, itises, ileitis, colitis, spastic colon, diverticulitis, ulcers, all of those, I use a combination of generally 3,000 milligrams of essential fatty acids with 1 tablespoon twice a day of black cumin seed oil. Interesting, no one even knew about black cumin seed oil 5 years ago. It's one of those indigenous regional folk remedies that have been around for thousands of years, because the cumin seed is an ancient seed, very common in India, because cumin powder, like curry powders, have been used in hundreds of different varieties. In fact, you can find over 100 different curries in India. You can find almost 1,000 different types of hot pepper. And some are so hot that even to touch them, it burns your hands. And you watch these people. I watched two doctors having dinner, and they were eating these red peppers like you and I would eat edamame, or, you know, sesame seed, soybeans with sea salt on them. And I'm thinking, well, how hot could they be? I mean, they're eating them like nothing. So I pick one up. And I said, well, I'll be very cautious. I'll just take the tiny little piece at the end. So I put it, I didn't even have a chance to bite down on it. Just the fact that it was on my lips, immediately it starts creating heat, enormous heat. Well, fine, I had about 3,000 glasses of cold water. I could have put about 10 pounds of ice in my mouth. And I'm looking at these guys, and they're just looking, and they're smiling. You know, like, okay. Well, but that also is very good for turning off pain. You see, cayenne, or the capsaicin, which is the active ingredient, comes in heat measures. Very low would be, let's say, 40,000. Very high is like 1,000,000. So finding one that's low enough not to cause any discomfort or burning, but that turns off pain. In a topical cream, you can put it on joints, muscles, but you can also consume it, and it helps the body heal. Now, there's one other thing that can bring down inflammatory cytokines, and that would be oil of primrose. And oil of primrose is terrific as well. We have an epidemic, even a pandemic, of diabetes or prediabetes in the United States. Put the two numbers together, diabetics and prediabetics, and you're dealing with one-third the entire population. We have an epidemic of type 2 or adult diabetes in children. And we have obesity in children. We're the fattest nation in the world. And yet we have a relatively small amount of people. China and India together have about 2.6 billion people. We have about 315 million, and yet we have more morbidly obese people than both those countries combined. So we're eating ourselves to death. Now here's a question for you. Why? This is not rhetorical. It's a legitimate question. I'd like for you to call in and give your thoughts. Now, put this in proper context, however. We are eating ourselves to death in full view of everyone around us, and we are doing nothing to stem it. Our government's not helping us, the Surgeon General's not, U.S. Public Health Service, nothing. Television ads are all for products that promote obesity, heart disease, cancer. The pizzas, the hot dogs, the beer, the sugar, the high fructose corn syrup, the refined carbohydrates, the fast food restaurant meals, the superfoods, meaning the super quantities, the amount of food that you're getting. In some places, you can easily get a 32-ounce steak. But the body only needs probably in the neighborhood of 1 ounce to 2 ounces to get all the protein if you're going to get it from that meat. It's riddled with hormones. It's deep fried. And yet, this causes digestive problems, leaky gut problems, allergies. It causes edema. And yet, we continue to eat ourselves to death. So you say, well, these are probably all semi-illiterate people. You know, they're culturally engaged in destructive processes. You think? What if I told you that 90% of the people that I counsel who are overweight have advanced degrees or are highly educated? Well, that comes as a surprise, because we were taught that the better our education, the better choices we would make, because we'd be wiser of the health choices we can make. What if I told you that the largest group of people that are following my advice are African Americans as a group? And if you doubt me, come to one of my lectures. You'll see 70% of the population African Americans, and they stick with the protocols. I was just speaking this morning with one of my running buddies and coach, John Q. And John and Jimmy and a bunch of us have Dolores Perry, and we have about 22 coaches, all have done multiple marathons, and they help others to train for the marathon. And John was reminding me when I was in Harlem at the Apollo Theater, and we had so many people who came to the Apollo Theater that they had to do it for a whole week. Every day it was packed. And they were all African Americans. I didn't remember seeing a single Caucasian there. And you put them on a protocol, they stick with it. You put the average other person on, they don't stick with it. Very high dropout rate with regular people. So I'm asking why. Why are we eating ourselves to death? If you have an answer, I'd like to hear it. I'm going to hold my thoughts. I'm Mr. Nears. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall. Now, how are we going to cut this diabetes? Well, we can do a lot. We can exercise. That's number one. Twice a day if you're pre-diabetic or you're diabetic, because that maintains your blood sugar level. Secondly, understand that insulin is going to cause you to gain weight. It's one of the biggest reasons we're obese in the United States. Next, it's very easy to eat low-glycemic foods and to eat ones that digest slowly, therefore don't spike your blood sugar level. High fiber, that's another thing that helps us. But then, according to the latest article from a major peer-reviewed journal, and here's what it says. This is from the Lips Center for Diabetic Research at Heinrich Heine University in Düsseldorf, Germany. It says, the best way to slash the risk of developing type 2 diabetes is to drink at least 4 cups of tea a day. Now, a study of the European population found that people in countries that drank 4 cups a day, the British, for example, have 20% lower risk of developing diabetes. Why? Well, because it's what's in the tea, especially the green teas, black teas, oolong teas, red teas. These are polyphenols, and those polyphenols are extremely beneficial for maintaining blood sugar. They also do something else. They stimulate the immune system. They have properties that can stop pathogenic activity in the body. They can help with bad bacteria in the gut. They can help lower your risk of blood clotting and therefore are antihypertensive. And they help stimulate drainage and cleansing out of the liver and kidneys. All important. I'm going to be taking your calls in just a moment. Here's something interesting from Science Daily, published in PLOS One, the scientific journal. It says psychoactive medications, those would be your antipsychotic medication, Prozac, Paxil, Luvox, in water affect the gene expression of minnows in ways that mimic the gene expression pattern associated with autism spectrum disorder in genetically susceptible humans. That's according to the newest research. This was done at Idaho State University. And, well, there's Prozac, Pluvoxetine, which is a serotonin reuptake inhibiting drug. So, let me put this in lay language so we understand what we're talking about. They're finding that when fish are exposed to psychiatric medications in small amounts in the water, because remember, when you urinate or defecate, you've taken any medication you've taken is going right into the water supply. And our current methods of filtering water cannot filter that out. Can't filter any of the nanoparticulate matters out. So when the fish are swimming in this water, they're changing their behavior to that almost of autism. All right, well, what does that mean for people using the drugs then? And not in nano amounts, but high amounts. Hello. I think it's one of the reasons we have an awful lot of kids that are having autism spectrum disorder this time. Some good news about pycnogenol. Now, pycnogenol was very popular back in the 1970s. Then it just became invisible because of all the other super nutrients. But pycnogenol, P-Y-C-N-O-G-E-N-O-L, pycnogenol, according to the latest research, and that is really from the French maritime pine bark, it boosts vascular health in people with stable coronary artery disease. And that's a good thing. This was based upon a double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trial and published in the European Heart Journal. So if you have heart conditions, think about 100 to 200 milligrams of pycnogenol a day. That could make the difference in keeping you alive or not. Well, we are joined in studio in New York by Luann Panessi, who's dropped by. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary.
Okay, a question for you. A quiz.
I hate when you do this.
I know, but I know you'll get this one right. Okay. A new study, an hour of TV can shorten your life by how long?
5 years. Close.
An hour of TV? No, you'd be dead within a week.
Oh. I hate when you do this, Gary.
Just think for a moment. Well, let's see if anyone else can help you and get this right.
Well, it would be an hour because you're wasting your life watching an hour of TV.
No. Let's help get this right. Who out there can give me an answer? 1 hour of TV shortens your life by how many minutes? And keep in mind, the average person watches television almost 7 hours a day.
Mind-boggling.
It is. Give a call at 888-874-4888. And I'll keep that aside for a moment, and then hopefully someone will call in and get the right answer. There's also some new links between diet and acne, and this was good research published through the Dermatological Nursing Journal. And what they found was that when you have dairy, it can cause chronic conditions of bad skin. And it can really exacerbate this. So finally, for those in the food area who found that dairy and the sodas and any foods that are high in glycemic, which means all your sugar foods, how many times have we seen people be on a sugar diet, dairy diet? They get off, they detoxify, and the skin clears up. Now, there's one of those people right here. That you can answer.
Yep, that's me. Yeah, I had very bad acne. And as soon as I cleaned up my diet, amazingly, the pizza, the meat, the sugar, the processed foods, the minute I stopped all those, not the minute, but within a week, my skin already started to clear. And then I added in all of the antioxidants and vitamin C and exercising and... Wow, what a difference. If people saw me then and now,
your skin looks like a 20-year-old. It's completely smooth, not a blemish, not a wrinkle. And yet I can remember all the pock marks and on the acne. It frequently is very inflamed acne.
Yes.
Tell people what you ate back then.
13 cups of coffee a day with half and half and sweet and low. Cut those calories back, you know. And I ate a lot of fast foods. I worked in a teaching hospital, so we had a lot of leftover pizza and Chinese food and lasagna, things like that. Whatever the interns didn't eat, they brought to the nursing station. And I lived on donuts, and that was my dessert, and chocolate to keep myself awake. I didn't even realize I had chronic fatigue syndrome, so I kept myself awake by eating caffeine and sugar. And, you know, Gary, everybody was doing it. That's how everybody ate. And, you know, when the abnormal becomes common, it's accepted as normal. And so this is what we've been trained to eat. And, and I would eat one of those big bags of cheesy popcorn before I went to sleep, and because I didn't want to be hungry before I went to sleep. And, of course, I'd wake up all bloated and I was constipated all the time and didn't have time to exercise because I was a workaholic. And, I think that we're just sort of hypnotized into eating the way we eat.
Hmm.
You know, you see commercials on TV and at 10 o'clock at night, you see a triple-sized burger dripping with cheese. And, you know, now that looks like pus to me. And the smell of meat, it smells like dead flesh to me. And when I see a chicken, you know, in a pan, I envision what the chicken looked like before it died. Of course, I watched your DVD Chew on this, and I still have nightmares about what I watched. It was amazing information. So I think that we're pretty much hypnotized by, you know, what we're taught in school, but by what we were taught in nursing school, that dairy is a food group and meat is a food group. And candy and ice cream is a food group.
And death is a food group. We got a lot of people who eat food and die because of it. Now, you're right. I'm thinking of a person that you were counseling that works the night shift and stays awake by drinking coffee throughout the night, then can't get to sleep in the daytime. And without a good night's sleep, your immune system takes a hit. And now the person has fatigue all the time. Adrenals are shot. You can mark about 5 to 7 years off your life when you work night shift. And that's unfortunate. We're going to take a call, see who's on the line. We have Paula from Florida. Hi, Paula.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Very good. I believe I have the answer of 22 minutes.
You're right. It is 22 minutes.
Ha! Got it, Luann.
Well, hey, thanks for sharing.
No problem. Okay, how many grams in an ounce?
Yeah.
I'll never forget
that one. They don't forget that.
I'm telling you, I will never, ever live that down.
Well, here's what they found. Watching TV an hour a day after the age of 25 can shorten the person's life by about 22 minutes. And now think of how many people watch. You're looking at the average person, I estimate, is losing somewhere around 3 years just on a regular basis. Now, that's not people who are watching 6 to 7 hours a day. That's just 1 hour a day, 3 years. So you could be losing 15 years off your life expectancy. That is ridiculous. And, you know, people should allow themselves no more than an hour of television a day.
Well, what about, like, the Discovery Channel or Nova, where I can get engrossed
Fine.
In that?
Fine. Then watch it for an hour.
Right.
But then you're doing something or not. You're exercising. The assumption is if a person's in front of a computer or a television all day, they're not exercising, they're not eating right, they're more sedentary. You're not. So that's not going to impact you as it would them. Thank you for your call there, Paula.
You're quite welcome, Gary. Can I ask you a question about storage of vitamins while
sure.
I have you on the phone?
Yes.
What's the best way for long-term storage of a multitude of vitamins?
In your stomach.
What if we roll down the road to Texas next year?
The best way of storing vitamins would be in the refrigerator.
Okay.
Just make sure the cap is kept.
I need a warehouse-sized refrigerator.
Then keep them in a dry, cool environment.
Okay. In the bottle, in the sealed bottle?
Always in the bottle, yes. Yes.
Okay.
The normal lifespan for most vitamins is about 5 years.
Okay. And even beyond the expiration date?
Beyond the expiration date, it depends upon how it's been stored.
Okay.
But I wouldn't be using a bottle of vitamins that was open after 5 years.
Right.
I'm just saying that if you had a bottle of vitamins and you didn't open them, they could last up 5 years.
Super.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All
Hope
the
to
best.
See you next week.
Bye.
Okay. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Science Daily. Heavy cell phone use is linked to oxidative stress. I'll quote this. Scientists have long worried about the possible harmful effects of regular cellular phone use, but studies so far have been largely inconclusive. Currently, radio frequency electromagnetic fields, such as those produced by cell phones, are classified as a possible carcinogenic activity in humans, which means a group 2B, by the International Agency for Research on Cancer. A new Tel Aviv University study, though, may bring bad news. To further explore the relationship between cancer rates and cell phone use, a Dr. Hamzani of Tel Aviv University Sackler Faculty of Medicine and also head of the head, neck, and surgery department of the Rabin Medical Center look for clues in the saliva of cell phone users. And since cell phone is placed close to the salivary gland when in use, he and his fellow researchers included departmental colleagues who are specialists in the field. And what they found was, because they simply hypothesized, if there is an effect, that salivary content could reveal whether there was a connection to developing cancer. Comparing heavy mobile phone users to non-users, they found that the saliva of heavy users showed indications of higher oxidative stress, a process that damages all aspects of the human cell, including DNA, through the development of toxic peroxide and free radicals. More importantly, it is considered a major risk for cancer. The findings are reported in the Journal of Antioxidants and Redox Signaling. And it's putting stress on tissues and glands. Now, you have all kinds of glands in your throat, in your neck, under your armpits, up around your head. So that is really bombarding those. So the key is be aware that you have no more than 2 minutes a week of cell phone use before you start damaging your DNA and affecting chromosomes. 2 minutes per week. Most people spend hours a day. The only way to use a cell phone safely is to put on speakerphone or to have a long cord so that you're having it at least 3 feet away from the body. Then it's okay. Also, a new study done at the University of Pittsburgh shows and published in the peer-reviewed Biological Psychiatry shows that diets that lack the omega-3 fatty acids lead to anxiety hyperactivity in teenagers. Now, we know that the average teenager does not have a healthy diet unless they're, you know, they're guided by their parents and they have some standards. Whereas in France, the kids have to have 3 to 4 good meals a day. They don't have a choice. There they have a lot of parental control, and it's the custom and tradition that they honor what the parents say. Here in the United States, most kids just care less about what the parents say, you know, and and they'll eat what they want to eat. Well, that means they're going to be eating junk. They're going to be on caffeine and sugar. Hamburgers, they give them too much protein and bad protein. And cell phone use. All that is stressing the brain. All that is causing glandular imbalance. That causes hormone imbalance. So, quote, diets lacking omega-3 fatty acids found in foods like wild fish and can have worsening effects over consecutive generations, especially affecting teens. So what are one of the biggest problems we're seeing in teens today? Hyperactivity. So if you give your child the omega-3 fatty acids, either from fish or vegan sources, flaxseed is good, walnut oil is good, avocado oil is good, eating avocados is good, eating flax, and this is all good, or give them fish oil, you could be helping them not be hyperactive. Many people have a cut, they'll put some colloidal silver on it. Eat something bad in a restaurant, they'll drink some colloidal silver. They come into contact with someone who has infection, like on an airplane, they'll spray colloidal silver in their nose and their mouth. All that is important. Here's the latest on colloidal silver from Natural Society. Quote, have you heard of a miracle product known as colloidal silver? The basic reason for any colloidal silver efficacy and safety is that the medical establishment and the pharmaceutical industry see colloidal silver as a financial threat. And while you may have been cautioned against using colloidal silver, know that colloidal silver benefits are tried and true. But the medical establishment, Big Pharma, puts silver medical products to work in hospital equipment, and medical tools, as well as anti-infection burn remedies to prevent MRSA, which is a methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus infections, which are potent lethal and have become antibiotic resistant. And yet the medical establishment promotes fear-mongering lies through various media outlets and threatens colloidal silver manufacturers through various federal, state, and local health agencies. The difference between their medical products and colloidal silver is patent rights that yield royalties for several years. Colloidal silver can be made by anyone with inexpensive equipment and can't be patented. And in fact, as of January 2009, the European Union has banned colloidal silver manufacturing in European nations, and that's simply because of proprietary interest. But here's how colloidal silver works, and here's how you get the benefits. Many consider colloidal silver as an antiseptic and not as an antibiotic because it kills more bacteria. It destroys viruses, eliminates fungal infections like candida. So far, bacteria that are resistant to silver haven't developed, while colloidal silver can destroy antibiotic-resistant pathogens, even the dreaded MRSA. As a matter of fact, now the medical establishment has been covertly adding colloidal silver into antibiotics to conquer the superbug strains that have developed immunity to those antibiotics. So it works. The silver nanoparticles neutralize the minority of aerobic pathogens by disrupting their ability to use oxygen. It's relatively simple. So a couple of key colloidal advocates would be have probiotic always on hand, and always have some colloidal silver spray. So let's say that you're in a place, someone sneezes on you, someone's coughing, a coworker is sick but not wearing a mask. Just spray colloidal silver on your desk, your telephone, your hands, on your mouth and nose. For the next several hours, anything comes in contact with it is going to get killed, which is good. And then if you want to eat a little more power, take about 20 drops and put it under your tongue and then swallow it down. That'll kill the bacteria and viruses that are in your throat. So that's good. And finally, on Health and Nutrition Today, how to get more cancer protection from your broccoli. And this shows that, quote, broccoli has been shown to kill the stem cells that make cancer immortal. Now, while broccoli is a source of sulforaphane, sprouting broccoli boosts the sulforaphane content to astronomical levels. 3-day-old broccoli sprouts contain up to 100 times higher levels of sulforaphane than a mature head of broccoli. Just 1 ounce of broccoli sprouts contains as much sulforaphane as 1.5 pounds of broccoli. And also, broccoli sprouts have been proven to be very effective in reducing breast cancer risks. And a University of Illinois study published in the British Journal of Nutrition suggests that combining broccoli with broccoli sprouts may make the vegetable's anti-cancer effects almost twice as powerful. In fact, there's a Dr. Jeffrey, a professor of nutrition at the university, and says that it takes just 3 to 5 servings of broccoli per week to obtain the cancer prevention benefits. So I suggest doing some sprouting. It's very easy to sprout. You can sprout broccoli sprouts in 5 days. And that is the latest on that. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a break. Time for you now to call in and share your thoughts. 888-874-4888. And if you haven't watched the Motown play on Broadway, I definitely recommend it. I went to see it this week, and it was brought back all the memories of all those great acts. But it also told a very sobering story about Berry Gordy Jr. and how Motown was founded, you know, and what he went through before then, and how he got his startup money of $1,000. He had later sell his company, I think, for $400 million. And he made so many people famous, but then it shows you how they left him, you know, and they had a reunion at one point. He didn't even want to go to it. He was so angry at what happens when you make someone's career and they abandon you. Little interesting side story. I was down in South Beach, and I was putting storm windows with my buddy from my hometown. We grew up together since age one, Tom Croft. And we'd put up our storm shutters and fine and about to head back to the other coast and went up to have a little lunch at this restaurant. And suddenly this guy comes over and he says, "Hey, Gary." I said, "Yeah." He says, "Man," he says, "listen to you all the time, read your books." He said, "Nice to see you." He says, "What you doing?" I said, "Well, just on having a little lunch and heading back to the West Coast." He says, "Well, come to a little thing tonight. You'll love it. Here, I'm going to put your name down on the VIP list so you get in." I said, "But my buddy just has his bib overalls. We've been working." He said, "Don't worry about that." So I said, "Well, Tom, you want to go?" And he didn't want to go. And I said, "Well, come on." He said, "Well, I don't have any clothes." I said, "We'll go buy you something." So we went out and bought him, you know, some slacks and a shirt. And then we went. It was the Fontainebleau. And sure enough, there was a big line. And so I went over, and this other little line, there was nobody. And I said, "My name's Gary Knoll. Am I on the list?" And he said, "Sure." So I went in, and it was a big theater, and there was a little roped-off area down by the stage. And I was sitting right smack in a table by the stage. And I still didn't know what all this was about. I'm thinking it's some kind of concert, you know, performing. And then when everyone got seated and when it opened, here comes the same guy out on stage. And he says, "You know, this is a time when we're bringing in new acts to introduce our audience to brand new performers. But we also have some of the legends of Motown here, Smokey Robinson," and went through all these famous people who were there. And so it was an introduction of some of the new people. And then it turned out that was Berry Gordy Jr.'s son who ran the company. And it was just wonderful to see the new acts. But the new acts just, you know, when you grow up and you're used to a certain rhythm, there's no song that I've heard that can compare to Marvin Gaye's song that was the number one selling song in the history of Motown about his anger at the war in Vietnam and what's going on. And you don't have songs like that. You don't have voices like that. You don't have performance like that. You don't have the depth of feeling And you don't have all the arrangers that you had. Wow, they acknowledge the people that actually write the music and produce, you know, the songs for the performers. It was just a wonderful evening. Then afterwards, a gazillion people come up who are into health and nutrition, who also happen to be into soul music. It was one of those ones, and when I was watching the Motown review, the history of Motown, all these memories came back. It's just one of those wonderful worlds where this stuff happens. And now we're going to take your calls now. Let's say hello to Leslie from Miami. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Gary.
How can I help you?
I'm calling you because my aunt has stage 4 cancer. She's in her mid-50s. She's gone through chemo, but now her white blood cell count is too low for her to continue with chemo. And unfortunately, the people around her seem to be, I don't want to say giving up, but just accepting that there is maybe nothing else that she can do, and I refuse to do that. So I'm calling you in hopes that maybe you could give me some advice to give her.
Sure. First of all, there's always something you can do. You should never give up hope. I can't tell you how many people I've worked with who everyone gave up hope on. I was with one of those people today who came in my office, and she had advanced Alzheimer's, so advanced she couldn't take care of herself. And she was going to an assisted living center for Alzheimer's patients, which all they do at these centers, they just keep you on tranquilizers all day long so you don't cause anyone any grief until a person dies. And once you're in one of those centers, you don't live very long. And today, well, there she is, just talking as articulately as you could imagine. You would never know there was a thing wrong with this person today. And even though she's had accidents and she's had some setbacks because of these accidents and anesthesia, she's still, for all intents and purposes, able to carry on a normal conversation. So in my world, you always start with faith. Always. You know, you hear the theme song I play, it's gospel. I grew up in a small town, and I went to First Christian Church. And they didn't have good voices. They didn't sing, and their music was uninspiring. Completely. But right at the bottom of Clay Street, there was a Baptist church. It was all black. And I would go down there, and that's where I would hear this wonderful, you know, really foot stomping, clap your hands, smile, feel good about life, and know we're all connected. And that was my introduction and love for gospel. I love gospel. And I really wouldn't care what it was attached to. You know, the religion is secondary. It's being moved by something. But it's always been my belief that no journey starts unless we're willing to recreate ourselves through that journey. And that's why sometimes our healing allows us a second chance at life. And when I think of how many people along that journey of healing will stop for a moment and say, you know, I thought it was over. I thought it was the end. I felt lonely. I felt isolated. I felt depressed. I felt fear. But now I'm realizing I have a lot of control over this, and I'm not going to drive myself off that cliff. But you have to have faith. Now, for a lot of people, they don't have any faith. They believe in such an existential concept of life that if they think, well, I'm going to do what I'm going to do because there's nothing after this, so why should I care? They may place some ethics in it. They may not place ethics into the equation. But they're really not connected at that heart level. They don't believe in the chakras. They don't believe in vibration. They don't believe in energy. They just believe in cause and effect and nothing else. And if what they're told by their doctor doesn't work, they're not going to eat anything that's vital because they don't believe in vitalism. They're not going to believe in the power of positive thought because they don't believe in positive thought. There's only thought. But I've seen in my life tens of thousands of people improve and change when they have the faith in themselves, the faith in the universe, the faith that there is something more. Whatever you wish to call it is your business. But when you connect with that, you're no longer alone in your journey. Everything you do, everything you think, every step you take is borne by silent witness. Now, this isn't about religion. This is about understanding the power of understanding the cell. Right now, your eyes are blinking about 8 times or more per minute, but you're unaware of it. If it didn't, your eyes would chafe and you'd go blind. If you ate tofu, it's going to digest differently than if you ate roast beef, different than if you ate brown rice. How does the stomach know that? If you stand up, your blood pressure increases. You sit down, it decreases. You lay down, it goes down. Your metabolism slows down about 10% when you're sleeping. And when you're running, your heart compensates for the speed that you're running, and your body movement speeds up. But the moment you stop, it comes back within 5 minutes. How does it know? How does every mother in the world throughout all of history know to kiss the baby? It's not just maternal bonding. It's when the mother kisses the baby, the saliva of the mother and the baby are mixed. The mother then reads the baby's immune system, creates antibodies, and produces it through her milk. So every kiss from a mother to a newborn is giving it the natural immune enhancement, natural immunity. How does a mother know that? But they do. How do we know through peristalsis how slow food should be so you get the nutrients? Because if it's too slow, you have complete congestion, and if it's too fast, you have malabsorption. But it knows. How does your kidney know to slow down calcium excretion if you haven't taken in enough, or speed it up if you've taken too much in? Who taught it that? But it knows. And when you pass, the only thing it's missing in your whole structure, not your eyes or teeth or heart or white blood cells, it's your energy. And we know that the only thing in life that cannot be created nor destroyed, that we've never created it, we've only created uses of it. Fermi with the atomic fusion that led to the atomic bomb. You have sun, you have water, you have turbines, you can create various forms of electricity. But you had to have energy to begin with. And we have never created energy ever. No human being has. Only unique uses. So then you could say that life is simply the quality of energy. Therefore, every action that has occurred in our body without being taught is savant. And since you did not know any of these trillion biological processes at the cellular level, and yet they work perfectly until we interfere with them, or something interferes with them, then how could you say that there is not a connection to a higher energy when you have 100 trillion cells working in perfect harmony and you can't get 6 of your family members to agree upon anything? So I trust in nature, and that means that the energy holds the memory and the innate knowledge of life. Attune yourself to the vibration of energy, and you then open a door to a cosmology and an ethereal understanding of life that you've never had before. Hence, we'll look at these people and say, well, gee whiz, they're the mystics, or these are the sensitives like my mother. No, these are merely people who realize that there's conscious awareness, that which we're taught, and it's epigenetic. It's locked into our cells, and hence a lot of adults act out in ways that are destructive, and they don't know why, because they picked up the energy of the conditioning of their parents, or they matured in such a way they did not develop character, ethics, or morality, compassion, or sensitivity. Instead, they develop greed, selfishness, self-absorption, and that becomes the energy of the cell. Hence, we fight against our natural energy. And that creates duality, and that creates imbalance. In the state of energy imbalance, where we're no longer harmonizing, That's where cancer manifests. So you have to have a milieu into which any disease is able to pathologize itself. So that you start with something as simple as having faith that you can get well and liberate the natural healing energies of the body. When you do that, everything is different. Then, so you can say that the number one cause of death is not cancer or heart disease, it's our belief systems. The number one cause of diabetes and obesity is our belief systems. The belief system that we're only a value when we consume. And we look at a finite planet and we consume as if it were infinite. And what we cannot afford, we are given credit to buy by people who care not what we use it for, as long as they can get back the principal and the interest. We don't have a healing industry. We have a disease maintenance industry. So those people will look at what they could not achieve, cures, and say it's not possible, and they're absolutely right. But for those who are in the alternative position of seeing what happens when you use non-invasive and harmonizing and vitalizing therapies, cleansing, detoxification, rejuvenation, then they've seen these healed time and again. So that's where I would start the journey. Have your family member watch Preventing and Reversing Cancer Naturally, the DVD, and watch it with her and see how much it makes sense. Then watch Supercharge Your Immune System. All right? That'll also help. And then read Who Are You Really? Or, no, you can't read that now. You can watch the DVD. It's out of print. Who Are You Really? And then Living in the Moment. That's where you start your journey. Everything else, the alternative medical approaches, the diet, the juicing, the nutrients. It does no good to tell someone to take indole-3 carbinol and curcuminoids and, unless they really have a belief, a faith, that they can beat it and change in the process. Okay?
Thank you very much, Gary.
All the best to you.
Okay. Bye.
I'm Gary Knoll. I'm broadcasting from our studio in New York City. I wanted to share this with you also. This is called The Lost Generation and the Failure of Capitalism. I thought it was valued. Quote, the basic measure of the viability of a political and social system is the position of the youth, a society that holds out for the younger generation prospects that are worse than those held out to their parents and grandparents, is a society that has ceased to progress and begun to regress, one that has lost any claim to historical legitimacy. How does contemporary capitalism measure up to this standard? 5 years after the economic collapse, 2008, young people have suffered a decline on a global level that in many ways is without historical precedent. By every measure, employment prospects, income, homeownership, indebtedness, conditions are far worse today than at any time since the 1930s, and there's no prospect of recovery. This decline has the most far-reaching implications in the center of the word capitalism, the United States. An article appearing in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend pointed to the impact of the job crisis, in particular on what it called the new lost generation. The journal pointed to certain indices of the decline, the share of the population aged 16 to 24 in the U.S. that is employed is 5.6% lower than it was before the crash and has remained flat since 2008. The median weekly income of this group has fallen by 5%. Quote, little more than half of young people are working full-time, compared with 80% of the population at large. College graduates leave school with a debt burden that is crippling both economically and psychologically. The banks and debt collectors suck up whatever income is left after outlays for basic necessities like food, clothing, and shelter. In households that carry student debt, the average amount of debt has tripled to $26,000. Between 2000 and 2012, wages of recent college graduates fell by 8%. and the phenomenon of highly skilled graduates with advanced degrees working in low-wage service sector jobs has become commonplace. These conditions are repeated in different forms on a global level. Europe in particular has seen a collapse in the living standard of the younger generation. Youth unemployment in the European Union stands at 23%, in Spain it's 56%, Greece is 63%. The political implications of these social transformations are far-reaching and are beginning to find more overt expression, not only in relation to economic and social issues. The younger generation is lost, not just in the sense that it has no future under capitalism, but also in the sense that it is increasingly lost to the ruling class and its political establishment. The forms through which these bourgeois seek to maintain political control are losing their hold. The enormous popular opposition to the war drive against Syria is one expression of this, an opposition that exists among all sections of the population, but is especially pronounced among younger and poor Americans. The ruling class was caught off guard by the level of opposition, the lies and propaganda pumped out by the establishment media and the human rights imperialism of the Democratic Party and its auxiliary organizations failed to shift popular opposition to another war based on lies. Well, I would agree with that. And I also agree that there will be more and more youth in this country that will begin to find their voice and to protest, because nothing that I see is going to make life better in any time soon for 75% of the American population. So just keep in mind, if all you do is lose yourself in depression, or you become apathetic and watch television, or you become distracted by drugs, alcohol, and passive existence, then they win. Become active. Stop eating their food, watching their television, reading their reports, newspapers. Stop believing them. They have done nothing but lie and manipulate. Take back your power. And when you do, then you're no longer lost. I'll be writing an in-depth commentary for tomorrow's program on this very topic. I want to thank you all for listening and sharing your thoughts. And I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day, everyone.
But you just don't understand.